I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the Red Room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. We keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, Chris?
2019.
Yeah. You never heard nothing like that. Huh? That's cool. Huh? We got bars over here, don't we? So on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Little disclaimer, Lisa's out. We're taping during the week. But we are here to give y'all some game.
She was on last episode,
She was on. So, yeah, this is probably dropping like 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
So, we'll, they'll let her voice for a week or two. And then we'll be back to us.
Right.
Back again. It is the incredible.
Rhyme animal.
The incredible. All right. So, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get to the show. So, excuse me. So today we got my man in the house, Juan Gray. You say it like that?
That's right, Juan Gray.
All right. Writer, actor, producer, right?
Yes, sir.
Podcaster, entrepreneur, all kinds of shit, right?
That's it, man. Creator at the end of the day. I just like to create.
Create? Okay, cool, yeah. Cool. So let's go ahead and give the kids a little bit of something about you, where you're from. I just want to give a little thing. Juan is also one of the characters on the show that I'm on, Deadly Class. Here from Vancouver,
yeah,
getting it in here in LA, trying to get some more shit going on, right?
Absolutely, bro.
Are you from like Montreal, or are you from?
I'm from my parents are from Mexico, so I lived in Mexico growing up. But after primary, I basically grew up in Montreal, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But then we went to shoot in Vancouver. I flew out to Vancouver.
Oh, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what happened. I'm from Montreal.
I thought you were there.
No, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you speak French? Do you speak French?
Oui, je parle français.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you speak a little bit, don't you?
A little bit.
Y'all got me here.
I'm just curious because I saw that you're from Montreal. And this is two languages there. They speak English and French. It's like the official languages. And so I was just curious.
Yeah. There's one section. I mean, there's a couple of different sections inside, like Montreal or Quebec, which is the province. Mm-hmm. And depending where you live, they speak more French or they speak more English.
Right.
But where I was kind of talking both growing up. Yeah, yeah.
And you moved there when you were home?
I was actually born in Montreal. Okay. I was born in Montreal. Then we went back to Mexico for some time for my dad's work. And then from my dad's work as well, came to Montreal. Grew up there, and I was basically speaking English with my friends and French at school, and then my house was Spanish, so it was a little bit all over. And then a bunch of my friends were from, like, a lot of African friends, a lot of friends from the Middle Eastern, so I was talking Habibi, everything, man. So I was just kind of...
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, man.
So, cool. Growing up there, you are a former athlete, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So, were you football, soccer?
Soccer.
Okay.
Or football.
I'm into the British shit, so I say football. But yeah, I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So what was that like for you growing up?
It was my everything growing up, man. I started playing at the age of 4. Actually, the word gol was my first word because my dad, coming from Mexico, he was... So what happened is, even if we were in Montreal, right, when I was first born, he would still watch like Mexican soccer and soccer in general, like almost every day. And when he gets really, really passionate, so when there's a team that scores, he goes, "God, God," you know, all over the...
Like those guys do. Like, you know, when it's like, what's it? It's called ESPN Deportes. You know, which is like which is the Spanish version. And if you watch the soccer on there, the guy's like, "Go."
it's funny.
It keeps going forever.
Yeah, forever. But I realized that that's like how they do it over there. So.
Yeah, man. So he was just screaming, right? Mm. Like that. And then my mother would walk in and Juan Manuel, because my dad's also called Juan. Juan. Okay. And Juan Manuel, you're going to wake up the baby. Vas a despertar el bebé, you know? And then he did wake me up every time. And I would start crying. But then that word just kind of gets subconsciously in my head.
Right.
And at some point, I was just like with them, and they're like, wait, what do you say? Go, you know? And then that's the first thing that came out. And then it was like, awa, which is water, and then mama, papa, all that stuff. But and then after that,
are you only child?
No, I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking like he's 13. Look at him.
I don't know.
Look at him. He's like, I'm older than that.
Well, he's playing a high schooler in the thing. So he has to look young enough.
Well, we're in an academy. We're like, they're supposed to be like 18-ish or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. 18 to 21. We'll give you that. Yeah. We'll give you that swing. We'll give you that swing.
That's hilarious. So I'm fascinated by you a little bit just because the more I know about you, especially after listening to your podcast. What's your podcast? Jump it right.
It's called Words to Success.
Words to Success. To Success by the
number
two.
Yeah, the number two. It's all about sharing like kind of what success is to I realized growing up. And what happened was that I was kind of looking for mentors in a way in business itself. And my business has always been for me to, one, help my family with different things. And also I wanted to be financially independent so I'm able to do what I want to do. There's so many times where I wanted to do something, but without the finances, it was impossible to do, right? Or I couldn't do it. I even produced something as short as a music video. And I wanted to be really, really good. But I said I could put stuff together, and I realized that if I didn't have all the resources, I had to become resourceful. So I became like a master of that. But then if you want to take it to the next level, you need to put capital in, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized if I don't have it, or my parents could help me the way they can. But after that, it's like, okay, I gotta start like making my own thing and not creating any excuses. Just do it, right? So I had a couple of different businesses, some that were becoming quite successful. And then I started documenting a little bit of a journey just on social media, doing like, same time I was playing soccer and all that, I would just sometimes go outside like a restaurant where it's like the most expensive restaurant in Montreal, for example, and I would just see, okay, these people have a lot of money. They're paying, you know, like $300 for a meal. They must have, you know, money, and they might be good in business, right? Stuff like that. So I would just wait outside, be like, hey, man, do you mind if I ask you a question? Like a little advice. They're like, yeah, what's up? Well, how did you become successful? Like I was really young, you know? But then I started documenting that and putting it on Instagram, and people like really, really liked that because everyone had different ideas and first different definitions of what success was to them, right? And also so many different pieces of advice. So it became, what are your words to success? And people started following, got like a couple thousands of followers to 50 to 100. Now it's almost 250,000 people following through there. And yeah, man, it started out like that. I started even taking like homeless people, man, what's your advice to success? What's success to you? Mm-hmm. And people all over, like all walks of life, they have like a different definition of what that is. And I think that right now in our society, and also my generation and younger generations, we see so many things on social media of the luxury things. And that's not really all success is. You know what I mean? So I try to challenge that. And also get different opinions.
The thing that I love, though, is first of all, your innocent curiosity is what made you try it, first of all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You gotta have the balls to do it, too.
Right.
But Chris and I talk a lot, you know, we're talking about screenwriting and filmmaking and stuff a lot, about how when you're younger and you first get into the business, there's so many things you try or you would do that are outside of what you know now. So because you know it now, you would never try it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes being young and naive is a good thing. And
sometimes.
And where I was going with that was, to me, your Instagram and everything went viral because you were being real and you were being honest, and you weren't like searching for trying to go viral.
Right.
Those are two different things.
Right.
Because people feel that shit immediately.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? 100%.
Exactly.
See, I love the fact that you're talking to these people, these 1%ers, if they're getting the $300 a meal dinner, and they're open to you, because I feel like you talk to them in a way that you see, because you're not asking them for anything, and you're really asking them about themselves by saying,
because everybody likes to talk about themselves.
Exactly. And so that's like a really, really great technique to get a lot of people to talk. That's cool. That's really cool. I like that. Yeah. I just have a question. it said in your bio that, like, why am I jumping around? But
it's okay. This is why we call it the rant room, because we just be jumping around.
I'm just curious, because I want to ask you. So you playing soccer and you get a lot of injuries. So what are these injuries? Like, what happened? You break your knee, break your foot? What was all that?
Yeah, no. I mean, I got multiple injuries through soccer. And I also did, soccer was my main thing. Like, mm-hmm. had the ball on my feet every single day, 7 days a week, right? But I also did a lot of martial arts. Mm-hmm. So, like, Kyokushin karate. I did some boxing. And what's funny is that, not funny, but I hurt myself in soccer, which is, like, not a sport that usually we would think compared to MMA and fighting, where you're literally punching people in the face. I didn't really, I mean, I sprained
an
ankle.
You never got hurt in that shit.
I never got hurt in that shit. You know what I mean? I got, like, a little knockout here and there, but, like, overall, I've been good. You know what I mean? I would do the knockout, right? But in soccer, I got actually a couple head injuries. So I got like multiple concussions, but then there was like one like really bad one, mm-hmm. Where I basically, after that, I spent quite a bit of time at the hospital, because I started puking. I started just kind of getting a bunch of side effects. And the thing about the brain is that the brain is the only part in the human body that after like real like damage, physical damage, it can't rebuild stronger. So, for example, let's just say I'm doing karate, right? And we would always fight. I would do Kyokushin, which is like the type of karate that GSP, mm-hmm. who's also from Montreal, mm-hmm. and that I know is basically he got a black belt in, and that's what it was his base. It's very street-like fighting, you know, knuckle to knuckle. But when you punch, for example, your knuckles are going to get stronger afterwards, right? Your knuckles,
it's like building a callus or something?
You're building a callus, yeah. Mm-hmm. Your bones are getting fortified. Same thing. That's why a lot of athletes that do martial arts or Brazilian jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, they start kind of hitting themselves a little bit just to get the bones stronger, the mm-hmm. elbows, the... all kinds of different places in the body. But the thing is about the brain is that with damage, it actually weakens and weakens. Mm-hmm. And it becomes, so let's just say you would get a bad concussion, right? And then you get another one a couple months after, or a couple weeks after. Your third one, you get a hit, it's going to be easier for you to get a bigger, more severe damage to your brain. And also you're going to get stronger side effects than if that was your first one, the same hit, just because you've got three multiple before that.
That makes sense.
You know what I mean? So I was in a position where I had, and sometimes it was literally stupid things, but it happened. I feel like sometimes you can't explain. I was like, why is it happening to me? Like, I would literally, let's just say I'm jumping, and I played midfielder, right? So I would jump high, and I would play like the high level. It's called AAA in Canada, so there's like multiple different levels. It was like the high level of the province. Then I represented Canada in a few tournaments in Europe, South America, and I would jump for the ball in the midfield, and I would go for it, and I would, instead of hitting the ball, let's just say we hit both each other's heads.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've and if you're that. Going, you're, like, kind of savaging, you know?
Adrenaline. It's going, yeah.
Like, you guys, and you're also, you know, you guys are strong kids, you know what I mean? I was about, like, 16 years old. You guys are all grown up, so there's a lot of power that goes into that, and if you're hitting that, like, if you want to hit a ball with all your strength, but you're hitting the head, sometimes you in the wrong side of the head, like, you can get some bad stuff. You know?
Okay. It was like hitting a bat.
Yeah, man. And I was also kind of guy, like, I'm fearless, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But sometimes that fearless, you gotta learn to be smart in that situation, right? So I there's a point where I started almost becoming, like, I didn't want to go for the head, because I would, like, last time I did, I remember there's one time where I hit one of the other guys, and the other guy, literally, I look down, he's passed out. He's literally passed on the ground. The referee calls, you know, he starts...
A red card or something like that?
Well, no, because it was unintentional, right? We both went for it, but the referee just is running with a... You know, he starts whistling, and I look, he's on the floor, and I feel like I'm okay. I put my hand on my head, and literally blood just starts dripping out. I have, like, a huge hole in my head, like, you know, and then the ambulance is coming to get us, and... So when you start getting different things like that, then it makes you kind of like not want to go for the header as much. But you also can't be fearful because then it's, you know,
it's like getting
worse.
Getting back on the horse.
Yeah, so it's a lot of mind when it comes to that, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, man.
I was curious because I just think that it's like I'm just curious about the journey. So that you go from the athlete, there's this kind of like this hurdle put in your way. And then you're gonna, you know, and because I'm just wondering, were you asking these people about their success stories while you were playing soccer, or was it after you decided to stop playing soccer?
It was actually after.
Okay.
It was after, yeah. So I always kind of had a bit of a, yeah, like I said, a bit of a lot of interest in business. Since I early on, I started like selling caps and hats like in school, importing them, doing different things like that since mm-hmm. I was like 13. And that was just, I understood, you know, kind of the supply and demand. So mm-hmm. I saw there was a demand. For example, you know when it's, you know the snapbacks, right?
Oh, yeah, so
there's a point where snapbacks were kind of becoming popular mm-hmm. again. They were popular before, then yeah. because through rap videos and the rap culture, they became popular mm-hmm. again, and a bunch of people were wearing them. So there was a store close by, and they sold these snapbacks and like all these different like baseball teams and basketball teams, but they were super expensive. They were like $70 right. each, at least. They also priced them up, so. Yeah. And all these kids around me, like in primary, and they started buying them, and they all had them. And when you're a kid, you want to kind of like
everybody
fit in.
Wants,
it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but you like want to because it's so cool, right? Right. And so I was like, I asked my mom, Mama, ¿puedo una de estas gorras? Can I have one of these, mm-hmm. you know? Like, and she's like, no, here's a hat, you know, it's a normal hat. It was like not an ugly hat, Mom. Like, I love you. Thank you for the hat if you're listening to this. But it was not the hat that we wanted. It was far from being a cool snapback. And so I said, you know what? I remember just going on the internet, and Amazon was not a thing really, eBay either. There wasn't really like, there was no e-commerce store selling that. But I somehow found this website. It was all like dark page website with a couple of different images of snapbacks. It didn't look mm-hmm. very legit. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Chinese website, but at the bottom there was an email. And I remember just emailing, because I saw that the price said $8. And it looked like there was a couple models that looked very similar to the ones. And there was one in particular I really liked. Mm. So I'm like, okay, I emailed this guy. And keep in mind, I'm like 13 years old right. here, right? So I emailed this guy and I'm like, hey, is this thing real? Right? Are you guys real, basically? And he answers, he's like, yes, we real. So I started kind of a back and forth conversation with this guy who after I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put my money into this. Obviously, my parents, I asked them for the card to do it. They were like, no, what the heck is this? So that was done. I found one of my friends. He had an older brother who had just got a credit card. So I'm like, look, man, I'm doing this. I really want the hat and mm. whatever. I'm like, I'm gonna give you money. Can we do it? I convinced him, and he put his card in. And a couple of days later, I get a box in the mail, and I'm like, what the hell? I open it, and there's two snapbacks in there. From the ones that I ordered, and I couldn't believe it. Mm. I literally couldn't believe that it was real, and it was a huge.
Like, so that was moment. The first. It sounded like that might have been the first time you ever sent out for something, and it came with your name on it too. Like one of those first times. Like, oh my god, like this is real.
Yeah.
Like you can actually send something somewhere.
Yeah.
Show up in the mail.
Yeah.
And it's yours. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I feel like we all have those moments where like the first time that you received something, right, mm-hmm. from the internet mm-hmm. or the first time you get paid, mm-hmm. like you sell a product or you whatever it is and you get that, it's like, oh my god, this is real money, mm-hmm. right? And you made that happen through a product or service. So that was kind of those like that like wow moment for me. And and then I realized, okay, I got this for like $8, right? And then I go to school. And everyone's like, "What the heck? Where'd you get the hack? I didn't uh-huh. see that. I didn't see that exclusivity." I'm like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "Where'd you get it?" I'm like, "Oh, connections." Right? So I'm like, and then they're like, "Wow, can you get me one of those? Can you get me?" So there was that demand that started building up.
Mm-hmm. You probably charged them $50. I'm cutting you a deal.
Yeah. You can cut it.
Yeah. So the first thing I thought about when I got them and people started liking them, I'm like, man. I can get this to all my other friends who can't afford it, man. Mm-hmm. So I was like happy. But then I'm also like, well, you know what? We have these like things that we're going for school, like these outings, right? And I remember they always have like food that mm-hmm. you can get there. And I don't usually have cash for that. So I'm like, I can maybe make some money as well for different things. And so I'm like, okay, instead of, you know, like they would pay $70 plus tax at the store. I can maybe do it for like $30, $35, mm-hmm. right? And for my good friends, I'll put it a bit lower. But mm-hmm. in general, I said, no, I know that's not true. I was doing it for $45. And then for my friends, it was $30.
Right. That's good.
Right? Because I already was like, what the heck? It's for $8, you know? And then.
Get your cash, man.
Yeah. So I was making about $30 a pop on each hat.
Right. Good.
Right? Because I realized also that. The more that I got, it went down from $8 to $7 to $6,
oh,
yeah, to under to almost to five something. So yeah, man. I took all the pictures on the on the website, and I created myself a little catalog. Hmm. A little catalog. I printed it out. I called it like Juan Hats, whatever. And I just went to school, and I'm like, hey, look, I have all these. And during like the lunch, and we had like a 15-minute break, I would go to people and be like, you were asking, well, here it is. And then they would give me cash before, because I didn't have any cash to put in for the thing. So then I went back with my friend. I'm like, look, here's $500, da 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 da. And then I would repeat the process. And I would, for some reason, my parents really didn't want me the first time to order because they thought, they were sure it was a scam. So I was, in the beginning, I was hiding it. I was hiding it, really? Like all the boxes, yeah. And I was hiding it. I was literally like afraid, because my mom was like, no, you know? And then one day she saw like a stack of cash, like of bills in my room. And she started screaming at me because she thought I was selling a bunch of drugs and all kind of, because there's a lot of that where I was growing up, right? So yeah, that's kind of like what
the beginning of your entrepreneurship. That's funny.
Yeah, it was supply and demand, and you know, buy low, sell high, right?
But see, what I like about that, you know, is you know, like I love the Shark Tank. I listen to another podcast called The Pitch. Yeah. You know, and it seems like everybody who's on the other side listening to the pitches are guys like you, who started as being people who observed something that was missing, you know, or found that shorter angle in how to get something, or spent an extra 10 minutes on the internet and right. looked into that one little thing that somebody else wouldn't do. You know what yeah. I mean? Like they just took that extra time, if you will, to learn something. And that's what fascinates me the most, when I hear about people like you who are like, you know, so business minded
right.
and they're just like always aware or see a gold mine in something nobody else does see. You know what I mean? So it's fascinating to me for sure.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, okay, so you're making money selling hats. Cheating some friends, not cheating all friends.
No, I honestly just thought kidding. I was doing a service,
just
right?
Kidding. Like, just kidding.
Yeah.
You have to make your profit margin. You got to make your profit margin. And then soccer is over. So now, how do you decide that you want to get into acting?
Yeah. So it's kind of a long story, but after you know, I had that. Because in Canada, I don't know how it is here, like the medical system, but at 16 years old, after that, you can decide to have like appointments and stuff with the doctor, with your mm-hmm. parents or not, right? So I decided that this meeting after I was at the hospital for a while, and I had done a bunch of exams, like CT scans, lumbar puncture, like a bunch of exams for my head, basically, that I would do it alone. And the doctor basically told me that and it was showing me basically x-rays and all this, and he said if I got like a bad hit like at the wrong place again, I could literally end up like a vegetable. So and it was also the moment where I was having like basically all the attention on me for my craft that I've been working on since mm-hmm. I'm four, right? And mm-hmm. since I'm four, like I literally wanted to become a professional soccer player. And you mm-hmm. go to my room, it's all, you know, Barcelona everywhere with soccer. Right. It was my life. Everyone knew me for that. So when he told me that, I couldn't believe it. But then when he showed me really like, and he was like, if you don't stop playing, and you get an injury, not only is your dream going to be over, but your life can be over as you know it, right? Mm-hmm. And basically that was like a big thing. And it was like the first time I literally, like I cried in front of this doctor. Like I just remember bawling and I couldn't stop, right? Because it was so painful. So after that, a lot of things happened. But that was like a catapult to getting in like drinking like very early on, doing all kinds of different stuff that I'm not proud of. But it was necessary for me to grow from all that. I also dropped out of school at that age. And I was just in a really dark period for about a year and a half. I was like, I was doing all kinds of stuff, but it was because I was a complete stranger to myself. And
you didn't have that thing that you usually
No,
have
I didn't know who I was at all. Yeah. Right. And not really, like not really consciously I was doing that, but I was separating myself from absolutely everyone because I felt like a complete failure and so much shit. And I was just like, I was just going through a lot of things. Right. But in that year and a half where I physically wasn't able to smile, man. I literally couldn't smile for that time. Like, it was really bad. Mm-hmm. I had 7 therapists I went to. I didn't, like, and it was because my mom and my girlfriend at the time, they were like, hey, you have to see someone. It was the scariest thing for my mom, man, to see. And I remember just walking up, because my room was in the basement. So I would walk up, I remember this time, and I see my mother just crying on the table and talking with my brother and just like crying and being like, you gotta go to school, I don't want you to end up like him. Wow. Like, to my little brother, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember that really touched me, and I had a lot of moments like that. But it was like, because it was not only that I was like a school dropout and I didn't know what I was doing in my life, but I was super depressed and I was doing all kinds of like things that you know, we're not good. And so it's scary for a mom, and especially like a Mexican mother and a lot of immigrants, like education. And for me, education is very important, but it was a school education that was just, you know, it was not working and for me. And it was not even that. It was just like I wasn't there. But during that time as well, it's when, so I was working at a gym. I was working at Costco. I was DJing at night. And I think it was just all doing all these things, trying to find myself, right? Mm-hmm. Because I, at the end of the day, I was always still a warrior, and I didn't want to give up on my life, you know what I mean? And I try to do things and try to figure out what else I was and who I was.
Right.
So what happened is I was going from point A to point B at some point, and I was in the, do you call it metro here or subway?
Mm-hmm. Subway, metro. Yeah.
So I was in the subway, and it was in the middle of the winter in Montreal. There's snow everywhere, so it's like super. There's like snow on the subway, you know, and like little puddles and stuff. And everyone, because everyone comes from outside with their boots. And I was just sitting there, and I watched this movie after, and it kind of reminded me, because that's the vibe. You know the movie 8 Mile, when Eminem is in the car, he's with his hoodie and like looking like a complete bum. Like, that's exactly like what I was at. My attitude was shit. Like, I was just like, I didn't care about anything, you know what I mean? And so I was just there, and I was stepping on this newspaper. And earlier that morning, I had a conversation with my mom about, and it all had to do with not being school and finances and all this, because I also was starting this business, and I had to like pay for it. But then also, if I wasn't in school, I had to pay for rent, and I had to pay for a bunch of things, because it was a way for me to go back to school. You know what I'm saying? So I'm stepping on this newspaper that basically says, said casting on it, and it had some like dollar signs next to it. And I just look at it, and I grab it, and I pick it up, and it's all kind of wet. And it said that they were looking for someone between, like, basically in the age range that I was. And I was like, a guy, and it was Montreal, but the casting was on that same day in like an hour, right? And I look at it, and I'm like, and it had something, I don't remember exactly what it is that I was going to do, but I was going somewhere, and I'm like, you know what? I look at it, and something just felt, I don't know, I picked it up, I walked out, and I figured out how to get there, and I went. And so, and I had no experience in acting whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like, anyway, so I walk into this casting room, looking like complete shit. am I able to swear on this?
Yeah, we were cursing the whole time.
All right, cool. So yeah, man, I walk in, and they're like, who are you? And I'm like, oh, my name's Juan, and I'm here for this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, who's your agent? I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. They're like, can you give me your headshots and resume, please? And I just stand there like, I have no idea what they're talking about. They're like, okay, like, who's this guy? But I ended up just filling out a form, waiting, and getting in the casting room. And I remember the casting director looks at me after, like, wanting me to do whatever. She's like, you're not exactly what we're looking for this role. Like, they have a complete different image of what they want. But they're like, are you studying? And I was like, well, no. And she was like, because you have something that's very raw. I remember her telling me that. It was very raw, and I like it a lot. And she said, you should continue, like, doing this. I don't know how long you've been doing this, but you should consider taking this, like, seriously, because I see something in you, basically. And I remember just walking out there, and I was just like, I was trying to understand, and keep in mind, I had absolutely no idea who I was, right? So someone's telling me that I have a little something was very interesting for me. And after that, man, I had just so many signs, so many things starting to happen. I went to my therapist's office after him telling me to do basically this document questionnaire, which would basically help me find a career in my life because I was like that, dude, you know. Basically, I started doing all that. He gave me that paper on one session. I go home and I fill it in with a bunch of different questions, give it back to him. And then he, when he gets it, he sits me down at a table. He looks at me. He just looks at me for the longest time. And I'm like, yeah, so? And he's like, well, my friend, and that you are an actor. So yeah. he just says that, right? But and what's crazy is that I didn't have anything that said acting, that said film, that said nothing on that paper. Like, absolutely nothing. It was just, like, numbers, and I would just kind of, like, put the numbers in and stuff. And I remember putting something about connecting with people and pain.
But he was looking at types. He was looking at, to me, he's looking at different types of people, and these types of people would be an actor. These type of people would be...
Yeah, but I mean, for me, thinking about all those different things, and I never mentioned acting or film to him at all. I had mentioned, like, what was going on with soccer and with that and my depression and all that. And it was crazy to me that out of nowhere, he was like, you're an actor. And I just had gone through this casting not too long ago and then got my first agent, which is a long story of how that happened. But he looked at me, he's like, you're my friend, you're an actor. Out of all the possible things. And I was just like, wow. And then I just, it's been a long road after that, you know.
Cool. I like that. It's a very interesting story. It's a very unique story because a lot of people who I know... who want to be actors, something that they really want to do from their young age. Or if they're athletes or stuff like that who want to be actors, they don't come to it until after their sports career is over. And they're kind of like, what is this similar thing that allows me to like kind of perform and be on, but I'm not having to be in the office. You know, I mean, I've met a lot of guys, like I used to study acting with a guy. He was a boxing trainer. He was a boxer for a while, and he was a boxing trainer, and then he was asked to come and train some actor on a movie, train him and be his stand-in or something like that. He just got the bug, you know, and then next thing I know, because I saw him, and he was, like, doing, like, King Lear or something like that, and I was like, but you're so, I mean, he's so, like, a big, thick, muscular type of dude. I was like, I don't buy him doing, not that I didn't buy him, but I was like, it just seems weird that he would choose King Lear, but he was really trying to push himself to test his acting ability. That's why he was doing all his Shakespeare in class. And I talked to him afterwards. I was like, oh, so you like, this is something that he kind of fell into it, you know, afterwards because because what he wanted to do, he couldn't do anymore. That boxing guy, and he had the head thing too, so he couldn't. It's interesting. It's interesting to see that. That's something that you got kind of like, I don't say steered into, but like the pathway opened up to you in a certain way. It's been, and also that you're very young at it. So you had a time to kind of like still, to explore these roles and stuff like that that you would get as a youth, you know, but not be the guy who's like, I gotta be in musical theater.
Right. And something that I like about you too, Juan, is we were going back and forth on Instagram, I guess a few months ago, and we were talking about, I was, you know, complimenting you on the show and whatever, and I was telling you, oh, I've been watching the dailies, dude, you look good, whatever. And you were like, dude, if there's anything you think I should do, let me know. And I was like, what actor asked you for advice? Like, nobody. You know what I mean? So I appreciated that. I was like, okay, he's still humble. He's still in that place of growth. He doesn't think he's got it yet. He knows he's still
He's still working toward it.
You know what I mean? So that was like, so that's when I said, you should come on the show. You know what I mean? Like, I like this dude. He's open. You know,
right?
And so I appreciate that shit. So, what was after that for you? Did you eventually start getting some? You got the agent. You started getting some roles. How'd that lead you to Deadly Class?
Yeah. So, I got a first agent who I basically met up for coffee, and after conversating with her, And she had a daughter who was so beautiful. Like, she was my age, and she was a super beautiful girl, like, blue eyes. Like, just, like, I remember sitting down, and I was like, oh, man, like, I have this agent, big agent. You know, back then I was like, this big film agent, and her daughter. And the daughter was, like, an actress who had done a couple movies, so I was, like, super impressed by that back then. I told her about, like, what I was doing, and I started my first acting class and this. And the thing is, I think early on, like, people have actually told me, if I backtrack, hey Juan, you should be an actor. You should be an actor, just because I would do things that people were like, what the hell? I believed you, because, you know what I mean? I would create scenes and all that kind of stuff. I was always very creative. I did music, but I never saw it as a possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always just like soccer was my life, and that's what I was going to do. And it was, I was very like on that. But if I kind of go back, there was many moments and times and like little plays that I would do for, like for, or like musical stuff. But I just didn't know it. So, going back, I was with this agent at the end of me kind of talking about life and everything that I was going to bring to this. She ended up signing me, and I just like remember looking at the contract, not really understanding it, but I'm like, okay, this seems
50% right. of my money.
Yeah, right. And signing it. And then after that, it started getting a couple little and it was funny, I started getting some first like background stuff, man. Mm-hmm. Like some first background stuff. But I remember like the first, it was like a background with a skill. So I would do like, I could dance like salsa, bachata, different stuff. So it was like, I think it was some salsa for the scene of a TV show. And like did a little audition for it. I got it. But it was kind of like, it was background with a bit of, with some salsa, yeah, with the main girl, whatever.
Featured part,
yeah,
spot.
Yeah, and they're like right next to me, I remember. And I remember that first day, I was like, when I got on set, I arrived going to the holding, and I'm just like signing my name in, and then just waiting. I'm like, hey, what is all this thing, all this, you know, the set. And when I arrived to the actual location that we're shooting, and I see everything and how they block the streets to do this, and how I'm like, wow. And I saw the whole crew, everyone working so hard towards one goal.
It's always exciting.
Yeah,
it's
towards one goal, to create a vision and to put like, to put a result together. I was like, man, this is beautiful. And I started even just connecting with the other people on set. I was like, wow, like it was amazing. And I think also the fact that the leads of the show were right next to me in the scene, for me it was like, okay, it's amazing I'm here and I'm super excited and blessed to be here, but what's the difference between me right now and that person who is like the lead of that show, right? So how can I get there? And it was so real to me because that person was right next to me, you know what I mean? It didn't seem far anymore or anything. And then after that, it's just studying endlessly at the... I went back to school at some point, and it was just because of my mom, and I just tried to go back. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to school, like I actually was skipping all my classes, and I was going to the library, and I was picking up like Al Pacino's biography, right. And I was reading about like directors, and I was reading of Scorsese, and then I was reading of like Stanislavski, and you know, all these the greats, and I was trying to learn as much as I can from directors, writers, and actors, and I was just kind of studying at the craft, and I would do go do acting classes, sign up to that. Sometimes I put all my last dollar into that acting class, and then I would have to for an accent. So it's just about keep on learning the craft. And I said, you know what, if I can bring what I brought to soccer that made me very successful for my age in soccer, and you know, I could have had a professional career in that. I said, if I work just as hard and I do like every day, I would run at 5:30 a.m. for my cardio, right?
Right.
What's that in
what's
acting?
What's that equivalent, right?
What's that in acting, right? Yeah. And I saw everyone in my classes. I saw and a lot of like very talented people, but I said, I don't think there's one person on here that's going to work as hard as me and that's going to do what's willing. Like I was willing to get uncomfortable. And it's not like because I'm not scared of anything. Now, sometimes I'm scared of something and I would go and I would do that thing that scares me the most, right? Because like I just have this feeling.
You'd be the first one to raise your hand to go, huh?
I'm going to jump in just for a second. Yeah. See, that's the thing that a lot of people don't think about in this industry,
right,
is that you really have to work really, really hard. Because there's people like you who come with a different type of work ethic. I think some people think, well, I got the talent and therefore that's going to carry me through. Right. But the thing that like I realized is that everybody out here has talent, but who's going to work hard? Right. Who's going to be early? Who's going to show up, you know, like, and know all their lines off book and stuff like that. I mean, who's going to do all that kind of work? Because that, like you said, it's like, you know, you made a great point. You were like, everybody is working this whole 150, 100 people working to get one goal, you know, and this, that is what you have to do. And that requires a lot of discipline to get everybody on that same page. Mm-hmm. And there can be no one who can be like in the wrong frequency. And it's really interesting to hear you say that, because that's a lesson I think a lot of people don't do. I mean, for instance, you know, like, so when I was in Savannah on the thing, we, you know, like I was director shadowing at this show, and so the first day we were at this prison, like an hour outside of town. So I was like, I'm gonna be there like an hour and a half, you know, call time is at 7. I'm gonna be there at 6:45. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I didn't know how it was gonna, what it was gonna be like there. I thought, well, it's in Georgia, it can't be that cold. But it was like 35 degrees that morning, you know, and I was like, I didn't have a hat. I didn't have any of this stuff because I think it was going to be that cold. But I was like, but you know what? I'm here. I'm going to watch everybody doing what they're doing. And I watched all the main people who I had met earlier, the producers and directors. Mm-hmm. They all eventually were coming to set at their time. But they were like, oh, you're here early. You're here early. So mm-hmm. you know what? You really want to make this important.
Right.
You're letting me know that you got here before me. Like all the people, I mean, PAs, like they were different, mm-hmm. but it was like, I mean, like that set a tone like for me, mm-hmm. you know, like in their eyes. And that's, right. and that's the thing that you're doing too, because people
are watching.
People are watching, yes. and people and the top people want, like they want everything to be easy for what everyone else is doing. And that sounds like a cop out. It's because they're juggling so much mm-hmm. that it's, you know, that most people don't even realize what they're doing, that they got to have certain things that are visible easy, because if they had to like, you know, like if they had to micromanage, they would get nothing done. And mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that makes, you know, like actors and writers and producers coming in who know they're part of the machine, but don't take that as like, the fact that they're not top dog is not affecting their ego.
Right.
You know, they understand, come in and do your part the best, because then it will reflect on you. Mm-hmm. And it's just like what you were saying earlier, like with Rick, was like, hey, this guy was fucking good. Let's bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
it's true. It's true. So get us to Day of the Class. What was it like for you going in for that? How did you hear about it? Like, how did that all come to you?
I got that as an audition, just mm-hmm. like any other one through email. And I remember...
Did you go in? Did you send your tape? Or what did you
Yes, do? It was a tape.
Okay.
And I remember before that, like, I had a couple of things that I booked off tape, but I always really love going into the mm-hmm. room so much more. I know some actors that they love doing tapes because you could do it as many times as you yeah. want or whatever.
I prefer to see them in the room too.
Yeah, so I mean, there's the pros and cons, I guess, to yeah. both, but I really love kind of like that energy with. Mm-hmm. So I looked at it and it looked like a really cool project. But to be honest, I had a bunch of other things that were happening like during that day at the mm-hmm. same time. So you know when you get like all these things that right. kind of come in together. I even had like two other auditions at the same time. So you can't put as much emphasis on one, but I remember looking at this and just stood out. And obviously when you read this, you don't know how big it's going to be, right? It was just like, it was called Grape, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, so I didn't know too much about it. And
we had to change the name, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't know too much about it, but I looked and this is really cool. And there was just something about it that seemed just really interesting to me. And back then too, it was not like, there was not the character of Juan, right?
Right.
So that I was going in for. And what happened is I was going to see one of my friends who owns a production company. He's a young guy from Montreal who owns a production company over mm-hmm. there. And I was going over to his place to check a commercial that we both did together.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, would you mind like reading with me? Because I just got a last minute tape and I need to send it in by tonight. Can you... And he's like, yeah, man, I'm like, no problem. Sure. Come over. And after we do the commercial thing, we'll do it. And so I basically went through that with him.
Mm-hmm.
I did the tape and that's it. I sent it off. And after that, they asked to get for another one with mm-hmm. like better lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. You know what? I did it with my father first. I did it with my father first, and then it was with my friend
okay,
on the it. Second time mm-hmm. for the better lighting.
Right.
And then what's funny is that I did it with my father first, and my father really puts a lot of expression into it. So it was like, this like kind of aggressive type of scene, right? And then he would like do it more aggressive than me, just like the
back. Is he on camera? Your dad?
No, he's not. Oh. No.
Oh. He's reading off tape going, "You will do what I say."
Yeah. You know the type when you look at a tape and you're like putting more emphasis on the reader because he's so dramatic and so big and so loud also? That's so amazing. Yeah, that's kind of like what it was. I was just trying to get him to tone it down. plus my dad was also playing Marcus, right? So it wasn't being super, needed to be super aggressive. And he had this thick Spanish accent. Anyways, after that I did it with my friend. Because they liked that tape a lot from what I heard. Then they wanted to see this one. But then I thought the lighting was okay, but they wanted to see another one. And so then I did it another time, and it kind of kept going where they were really interested in me for the part. So my agent called me and was like, "Hey, Juan, they really like you for this role. Mm-hmm. Can you do this tape with this scene?" I'm like, yes, absolutely. I go, I get that done, send it off. Mm-hmm. And then there's a point where like, Juan, they want you for like, for the role, for the pilot, right? Mm-hmm. And the name of the role was Chico's Boy, right? it was not even like Juan back then. It was Chico's Boy, which would have been for like one pilot. I would have to fly from Montreal to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. During that, I remember I had a couple different stuff scheduled, but I'm like, okay, no, I'm going to, even if it's a small part, but you know what? There's something about it. I'm going to go. Right. I'm going to do it. And and then we shot the, I remember I got super excited for that. Because then I started looking into it, and I saw who was attached to the project, and it was just like it was my first time traveling. Like I've been to Toronto, mm-hmm. did some stuff in other places, but to the whole other side of the country, it was my first time for acting. You know, I've done that for soccer, mm-hmm. for different stuff, but for acting it was my first time. So I'm like, wow, like, you know, like I get paid to travel there, mm-hmm. to stay in a hotel, and it was just really nice and very humbling.
Where were you at when you got? When you found out the show got picked up?
That it got picked up?
And that you knew you were coming back. You know what I mean? That's important too.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
The reason why I'm asking, because I like one of my favorite things that I always tell people is happy tears.
Yeah.
I love happy tears. Like even when I got staff on the show, I'm in a happy tear. And I love, and Chris and I have happy tears all the time with each other. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why I'm always like, what was that? What was it like when you got that call? You know, by the way, we're going to be bringing you back and you got 6 episodes or whatever the fuck, you know?
Yeah. At first it was like, they told me that I would maybe have 2-3 episodes, mm-hmm. right? That's what it was kind of like, 2-3 episodes. So I was at home. I remember I was at home, mm-hmm. and my agent called me and she told me that. And I was just like, I just got so excited. I started, I think my mom was in bed, and because I had an apartment for myself that I got, but I was at my parents' house, and I just started, start screaming, you know, it was just an amazing feeling when you sometimes you never know, because in this industry, a lot of different things can mm-hmm. happen, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of
situations. On our show, anybody could die. So.
Oh, yeah. No, but I've also had some situations where like I got a lead of a project, right? Mm-hmm. And then for some reason the project just doesn't end up going, mm-hmm. but it was in, you know, big thing, whatever. And that had happened to me like 2-3 times before mm-hmm. that. Like super, like I remember my dad was like, "Why? What is it about you? Like so unlucky that like, and, like they wanted you, got it, you worked so hard, and then you got it, you celebrate it, and then something happens right. or whatever."
Welcome to Hollywood.
Yeah, and so I had experienced that very early on, mm-hmm. and so there was always that kind of thing, like hoping that doesn't happen. But at the end of the day, I was like super excited, and then when I figured out that, you know, that it was gonna be after I did a couple more tapes, or you know, and also got over here, mm-hmm. that it was gonna grow bigger, and I really also. I was honest with the producers when I saw, I'm like, look, I love this show and I love this. So like, just like in anything, it's like almost when I told my coach, like, I'll do the whole game. You don't mm-hmm. have, like, if you need to switch me, mm-hmm. switch me. But if you need me, like, don't worry about me. I'll be there 100%. Mm-hmm. I'll like, cause I prepared for it, mm-hmm. right? I prepared for it and I have the cardio for it. So I'm just like, hey, like, I'm not scared of the work and what's needed, and I'll get it done.
Cause I didn't get a chance to go up and produce my episode. What was it like being on the set? What's it like up there in Vancouver?
Ah, it's amazing, man.
Yeah.
It's,
all the kids get along. Everybody's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first got there. I first got to LA. I got picked up and had a great conversation with Tigo, who was my driver. Super nice guy. Mm-hmm. And after that,
You know what I'm saying? His driver, like, he a pimp. Look.
I know, sick. In some SUV limo and shit, like, stretched out, just kicking back, drinking. What the hell?
Yeah. It was cool. It was like, so he starts telling me how, oh, he just drove DiCaprio not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And then he this director called you know, Alejandro González Iñárritu, mm-hmm, from The Revenant, oh, and this, right? Yeah. And one of my favorite movies, which is Amores Perros.
I love that movie.
Right?
I love
that movie. Man, I want to make a movie like that so bad, bro.
I love that movie. I have a TV show like that in the works. I'm going to tell you about it. I'll tell you about that offline. But yes.
Oh, man. Yeah, so he was just telling me a couple of these very casually, and I was like, And then he's like, no, I'm driving this guy called Juan Gray. And I was like, man, yeah, it's cool. And at some point, I'm just like, you know what, man? You know what would be cool? I was just kind of looking at the palm trees here. You know, not the palm trees, the nice, like, there's some cool trees in Vancouver they don't have in Montreal. I don't know, like, the name of it. Anyways, we were just on the street, and I was just like, and then amazing mountains, beautiful mountains in Vancouver that in Montreal, like, there's, you don't have at all, right? So, like, I was just looking, I'm like, it just kind of came out. I'm like,
was that your first time in Vancouver, or you've been there before?
I've been there for the pilot.
Okay, right.
For the pilot very quickly, but I hadn't gone through, like, that road specifically. Also, I went, now it was summer, before it was, like, November when we shot the pilot, so it was, like, always raining and all that. Yeah. Yeah, and right now it was, like, super sunny. It was like, oh, I felt, it was amazing, man. And I was just like, well, you drove DiCaprio. So I'm like, oh, you know what's going to happen, man? He's like, what? I'm like, in a couple of years, bro, you're going to be driving and you're going to say, oh, man, I drove DiCaprio, González Iñárritu, Juan Gray, you know? And I was just like, you know, that's going to happen, brother. Yeah. And he's like, and he looks at me, he's like, absolutely, my friend. That's absolutely. Good. I have no doubt about that, my friend. And so I was, you know, good vibes, you know? And I think you have to believe in what you're doing, man. And I'm not saying it in a way that, like, in a cocky way. I just really believe that's what's happening. And I don't know. It's just sending good energy out there. It just kind of came out on the moment. You know?
Let me ask you a question for the actors out there.
Yeah.
So you get a role on a show. They fly you to another place. What's your daily life like when you're not shooting? And what's it like when you guys are? Like, what should somebody be expecting?
So you
know what I mean, Chris? Like,
yeah.
For those kids, just curious, you know.
Yeah. Well, when I arrived to the airport, and, you know, just doing the normal thing, trying to get to the airport with that excitement at the same time, you know. If you have, like, a script of the show, I remember I just get the script and keep reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Learning about the show, and sometimes I remember just like to write. A little bit, a little right about either, like, the character. And what was interesting about this character, and specifically for Deadly Class, is that it was so, like, I didn't really know what was going on, right? I was Chico's boy. And then I knew that I was maybe not going to be Chico's boy anymore, and I was going to... But also, like, in the comics, you don't see a lot about this guy, which, and most of the other characters, like, and all my friends on the show, they have huge backstories, and especially Deadly Class.
Origin
the show
stories.
They go into different backstories, all that. And I'm like, well, for me to bring something, like, I want to have something at least for myself. I don't care if it, whatever, but I'm like, I need to have something for myself, just so I bring, you know, a three-dimensional character to the screen, or do my best to that. So I was just kind of, like, figuring out. But at the same time, you can only do whatever actually, you know, of that thing. So it was interesting. I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna try creating something for myself that I know would make sense in the in the show, and yeah, just starting to
but build it just something. Gives you something to work with. It gives you something to have, like, a backstory in your head of, oh, well, you know, when Juan did this, you know, blah, blah, he met Chico, and then that caused that to happen. But, you know, even if it isn't real, at least helps you to be in the moment of what could be.
And also, well, that's the thing that really good actors tell you they do. They'll do, like, 3, 5, 6, 12 pages of their own backstory, so they understand the character. It's weird, because it's a lot of times that sometimes the actors might know the characters better than the writer, because they're trying to figure out how to make all the behavior believable for those little small scenes. And you do that by just developing it and developing, go, okay, what, you know, like, am I? Like, you know what, I'm 15, you know, like, when I was 15, I did this. When I was 12, I did this. This is the first time I had sex. There's all this kind of stuff that you put into it that will never be seen.
Right.
You'll never talk about it, but it helps you as the talent, like, create that magic when the camera's on.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that was a really good experience for me, is that even if a character is, you don't see a lot of, like, you know, for example, I didn't have a breakdown about what Juan was, because the last thing I had was a pilot, and Chico's boy, all he said was like, not much, you know what I mean? Chico, he was Chico's like right hand man, and someone who, you know, could be aggressive and like, you know, strong, intimidating a little bit.
And did you pour like this? Did you pour the?
Chico did that.
That was
Chico. Okay. He was right there, though.
Yeah, I see.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, who is he? What kind of guy is he? Mm-hmm. So I started doing that. What was interesting is that, for example, I was like, okay. So he's like, Chico's like best friend since they're young. You know, they grew up together. He knows he's tight with Anima, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I started kind of creating this guy who I'm like, yeah, he's aggressive, he's that, but maybe he also has a good heart. And he has an intention. Maybe he wants something outside of King's Dominion. I'm kind of doing this little thing, not that it's going to really, you know, that we're going to show that on the screen, but it's something that's inside. And I'm like, this would be the very interesting character for Juan, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But like, then you go on set and the director's like, no, but he's like, okay, we want Juan to be just a super aggressive, intimidating bully dude. Right. And that's like when, and then another director might say, you know what I mean? But that's one of those things when it's like not a big character that is, you have to really go and adapt and still make it work. You know what I'm saying? And that has just been like, I think that one of the most interesting things, like how to adapt to different things like that, that when it's full on character, every director, everyone knows, okay, this is who this guy is. And you can really, you know, have conversations with people about him.
It's part of the tone meetings and all that stuff.
Yeah. So when
you have days that you're not working, what are you doing? Going to the gym, keep your body right. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I like to work out. I like to train. I mean, I do a lot of different, you mentioned like the podcast. So that's like a new thing that I'm doing right now that I love a lot. And just stuff in business, but I keep on like seeing how I can progress and learn, man. If I'm honest, all I'm doing is I'm experiencing as much as I can, man. I'm getting myself in uncomfortable situations all the time. Like every single day I do stuff that get me uncomfortable, and also that I try to do something nice for someone. Right. And sometimes it's easy, you know, but sometimes you have to get out of your way to do something. And I do that because that makes me experience life. And when you're able to experience life, you're able to grab things that you could bring on screen that I wouldn't have. You wouldn't be able to if you didn't really experience that. I like to read. I like to listen to different things, to watch films. Like I was watching with a friend of mine, just like Goodfellas, literally just in bed, just watching it again, you know, this week. And I like to watch classic films and be like, also to try to break it down in my head, like, okay, why he make that choice?
Right.
Why you do that? Man, that's so genius. That's like, oh, maybe I would have done that differently. All that, I think, is being critical.
That's how you grow. That's why we're one of the only businesses where we watch movies and TV shows, and that's like homework. That's Absolutely. You could write that shit off. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love that about it. It's total homework.
It's total. You sit around back, you know, I'm gonna watch 10 minutes. It is 10 minutes.
Exactly.
It is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was doing it the other day because I'm trying to figure out something to do on a pilot, and I watched like the first 15 minutes of like 9 shows. Mm-hmm. So I watched because I wanted to see
how they open,
what was happening, just figure something out like pacing wise. And it's like, and it's all shows that I'd seen before, and a few I hadn't, but it was like, yeah, but that's such a weird thing to do. I mean, most people are going to watch a show and they're going to turn it off, or they're going to watch the whole thing. They're just going to go, okay, I'm specifically going to watch the clock until, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you have to do the work. It's always about doing the work.
Right. Now you're starting to write and produce and stuff. So what, can you tell us about any of the projects you have going on now?
Yeah, man. Pretty much, actually, the first writing thing that I did was, like, I was still playing soccer, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I just had this huge idea about this soccer player who from Mexico who arrived to the States, and kind of this whole thing about how he happened and fell in love and this and that. It was about, like, chivalry, and it was a kind of this drama with also, like, some edge you know, the Crime Edge. And I woke up and I'm like, this is genius. And I saw the whole movie. And that's, I have to say, that's probably never happened the same way again in my life, unfortunately, because I would just be popping movies after like screenplays. Right. But that happened. And I remember I saw the beginning. And for me, it's always like, can I see the beginning and the end?
Mm-hmm.
And a strong ending. And mm-hmm. I can like work the middle. And right. I have like important pieces in the middle. Right. Then I know I can make a screenplay out of that or whatever. And I saw the beginning. I saw the end. And I saw the middle as well. I was like, oh my God. So, you know, those times where like I'll remember in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you just know you're going to remember in the morning. But you wake up in the morning and you like, have no idea what you had to remember in the morning. Well, that's happened. That's happened to me too much before. So I was like, man. I go and I opened up the computer and I started just typing, man. I started just typing and it was like 3 a.m. And by the time it was like 7 a.m. I was done and I had like over 100 pages.
What? Of,
but it was written in like, not as a screenplay, but I still put the dialogue and everything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't using like Final Draft back then and stuff. I didn't even know what that was. So I was just kind of like typing away, but it was literally like, I looked like I was on crack or something, bro. I was like that. It was just kind of going. I think it's also because I was in the middle of my sleep pattern, so I feel like I was in a certain flow.
Right.
I remember, man. I was like, it was kind of just like coming away. Like it was crazy. And after that, I was done, and I was like, this is a masterpiece. And so that happened, and then I had school like right after, so I had to like, get ready for school. So yeah, that was my first screenplay I wrote, and then after that, I when I started getting into acting seriously, I'm like, yo, well, I started seeing, I'm like, what kind of characters do I want to do, right? What kind of characters do I want to play? And I saw what I was kind of getting in the room for, and some of that was cool, but I was also like, yo, I'd love to kind of get in the room for that stuff, but it's like, I would never saw something like that was like for me or that fit my either my age, my what I look like or whatever. And so I was like, I'd like to create something like that. Why? Because it's real. Because I like people like that actually do exist, but I just never see anything about that and with this kind of story. So I just started writing and from personal experiences. Mm-hmm. Really, and
I think that's where it comes from. When you first start writing, you start writing almost every script I've ever written from somebody's. First script was something personal in them somehow. Like
somehow, and then it always changes.
My first script I wrote was about me and the whole mod punk rock scene back in the early 80s, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You always go back to the original thing. As you start getting older, you start getting more, you start understanding the craft, you start pulling from things that move you in a certain way, you know what I mean? And you realize, okay, that was that one that'll probably never be shot, but
yeah.
I'll move on to this.
That's what happens. What happens? Everyone's writing what they know, in a sense. But I think you always write what you know. It doesn't, but that doesn't have to be limited to your actual experience. Like you said, it's like you're experiencing a lot of things. You're experiencing a lot of things.
You can be inspired by.
Yeah, you know, to understand the emotional kind of like response to certain things. Mm-hmm. I think, and then that's what you're writing about. You know, to pull from. You know, like the event might not be the same. But how you responded to it is what you want to communicate to somebody else, you know, through a different scene. So,
yeah.
It's interesting.
And I feel like also there's so many times that you just get either inspired or you just see other people have a certain experience and you're like, wow, I never really like thought about that. And that can create something. Can become a story of its own because you see even a moment, man. Like even, so one thing that I was doing when I was out of school. This is like a weird thing that I realized I did it. I didn't realize I knew it was weird when I was doing it, but I didn't realize how weird. Well, so I would just go to the subway, like I was telling you, and there was like one train on this side, right, on my left side, and one train on the right side, and I would just kind of be in the middle, and I would just sit there for hours.
Really?
Yeah, I would just sit there for hours, and I would just look at people, man. Like, I would just look at people coming out from one subway to the other, and they were kind of cross, and I would just kind of start, like, thinking about what all these people are doing. I think also because I didn't know what to do with my life. I was just like, what are all these human beings doing? And I had a notebook at some point. I ended up picking up a notebook, and I would like, okay, this person right here is walking out, has a broken leg. As you see him limping, but he really wants to go somewhere.
Mm.
I'm like,
so you write a story about that.
That's cute. Where is that? Where was he coming from? And where is he going? Because everywhere everyone's coming from something, mm-hmm. it's going somewhere. Like right now, in this room, right?
Right.
I had a little experience coming up here, and mm-hmm. okay, and then I'm going to be doing something after this. So it's right. like, we're all doing that, and in a scene, it's so important that you know where you're coming from and you know where you're going.
Oh, right. It's the most important thing for an actor. Right. What was the moment before? What was the moment before?
Yeah, yeah. So I started kind of putting that together, and then I see, like, on the other side, there's this woman coming out with two kids, mm-hmm. and she's starting and saying something to this boy and whatever. And I'm like, hey, what if you merge those two stories together? Mm-hmm. And then I just started kind of, that helped me create, you know, different type of stories. And I think that's like a, I didn't really see it as an exercise, but right now it's something that I would actually like recommend right. people to do, because it just makes you understand human behavior in a different way.
That's exactly how you do it. And one of the things I love about this, because I was thinking about how your therapist told you years ago, you're an actor. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, you're also a writer. You know what I mean? Because that's how we think. Yeah. And in every situation you're in, I'm observing.
Yeah,
like people are always fascinated. Like, God, like, how old are you? Like, you're so wise. I'm like, because I study human behavior right. all day long. I see, like, what's wrong, like, before people else, other people do. Yeah. It's because I'm looking for different traits and different things and going, I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting about them. Oh, my cousin is kind of like that same thing. Oh, I bet I can figure them out in about 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you study that from being somebody who observes silently. You know, and through the silence, you are able to see the truth.
Right.
You know, I was going to say this one thing before we start to wrap up. One of the things I love about what you're doing right now, and Chris and I talk about this a lot, I'm one of those people that I'm the nicest guy and I'm also an asshole. Mm-hmm. And here's why. I don't have a lot of respect for anybody who's like, oh, I'm just an actor. I'm like, bitch, what else are you doing? You know what I mean? Create in some sort of a way.
Right.
15, 20 years ago, When Chris and I were first coming up, you know, it was a lot harder because everything was on film, so you didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm holding my phone in my hand. You know what I mean? You can create. If you don't know how to hold this, somebody you know in your group can do the hell out of a selfie. Let's see how they frame something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Figure that shit out.
Yeah.
You know, create something.
That's exactly
definitely. Right. Definitely. No, I was going to say, I mean like I think that, you know, it's so weird because it's like everyone's got to do 10 jobs, but it's like you kind of have to because, you know, I think by doing multiple positions, it just allows you to, it's like a marketing angle. It mm-hmm. allows you to be sold, and it also lets people know that to, on a subconscious level, you have a specific vision mm-hmm. because you're writing and producing and acting, because there's, like you said, there's roles or there's people, there's things that you've seen that you want to create because you haven't seen it yet. And that's like the vision that you have specifically. And if you were just an actor, you might sit around 15 years going, mm-hmm. man, I wish someone would do something like that for me to star in, and it would never happen. But you're like, right. you know what, fuck it, I'm going to write that.
Right.
I'm going to write that, and then I'm going to produce it.
That's why I started producing. And you know, here I am 20-something projects in now, because I was like, you know, the writer's strike happened. I was like, I need to do something. You know, I need to be my own boss now. This mm-hmm. is bullshit. Which is why I appreciate the type of success things that you guys do. It's all about how can you be your own entrepreneur and how can you, mm-hmm. you know, progress, you know, further. What is your vision of success?
Right.
And here, being here in LA, Chris and I both have friends, you know, that are freaking Emmy and Oscar winner people. Mm-hmm. So how do you compare yourself to that? Well, the key is not to. Because if you do, you're shit out of mm-hmm. luck, because all you do is want to be them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And envy will fuck with you. You know, mm-hmm. so you have to constantly be like, there's room enough for me. I'm going to take that part of it that they took mm-hmm. and use that to my best ability because that worked for them. So that I could still use that, but it doesn't have to be that way. You know,
I mean, people could be either envious or you could choose to be inspired.
Most people are envious, though.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it could grab you. So it's really, and you don't even know you're being envious when you're in the middle of it.
Mm.
Now, I've been in it. I know you've been in it. So it's just hard not to deal when it's all around you everywhere. One day you're hanging out with your boy. Tomorrow, they're the star of a show. You know what I mean? And it's like, wait a minute. He just started acting like 2 years ago. I've been doing it since I was 14. So it's hard not to take it personally sometimes. But you have, what I've learned is, there's room for every. It took years to figure that out. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, you know, and I'm fucking 48. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, still, you know, I've learned now as I'm an older, you know, guy in this industry that for me, it's about knowing who I am, knowing what I'm worth, and giving that back. You know,
absolutely.
Which is what this show is for. It's just, you know, giving out free game to people all the time so they don't have to make those mistakes we made.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Were you about to say something?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks, Juan. That's what's up.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. We told you, we're just having a little conversation, learning a little bit about you. And, you know, letting the people learn, you know, what you got going on out there.
Yeah, man. So, well, thank you so much for having me. And you guys, it's just really cool what you guys are doing as a show. I actually listen to it and, mm-hmm. and I'm like, man, this is cool that you guys, same thing, man. I hadn't seen a cool screenwriting podcast like before. I'm sure there is, you guys are definitely the coolest, but it's great that you guys take initiative, and it's not just screenwriting, but you talk about culture, you talk about all these things and keep it raw, man. That's really cool. And if I can bring that into my own podcast, how raw you guys are doing it, like, so, and it's so real and organic. And anyways, props to you guys for doing this.
I think the key for me, like I said, I asked you for your bio, just as an example. You know, Chris and I will look over people's bio and we're like, okay, we're not like, I don't even have it out. You know what I mean? 100%. I just did it just to understand a little bit more, but and then we're going to find out about you when everybody else does,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that it forces us to talk.
Yeah.
Because if I just go, so when you were 17, you said you... You know, it ain't gonna sound real, and people will hear it and be like, "Are they in the same room?" You know, what's going on? So I want people to know, like for my show, we're asked, and I probably get 10 different PR reps hitting me a week asking to have some showrunner on my show all the time, and they're like, "Oh, well, he's in London. Oh, well, he's in Australia." He was like, "No, he needs to be here," and I'll turn them down. And I'm like, "Are you sure this is a really big whatever?" I was like, "You come on our show." We're high-fiving, we're doing all kinds of
stuff. You have your guidelines, you have your...
Like,
come on the show. Like, don't, like, phone it in from, some transatlantic cable. Come on, hey, come on now. What's going on?
Oh, man. Well, I'm super grateful that I got to be on the show, bro.
Exactly. What's your plan? You planning to move to L.A.? New York? What is...
Most likely. So I'm going to be in Vancouver for a bit. There's a lot, as you know, shooting.
You staying there?
Right now I'm in Montreal, but I'm going to be going to Vancouver for a bit, and I'm going to see a couple projects right now that I have that are in the works.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd definitely like to come down to LA at some point in the near future.
I mean, I'm not saying you have to be here because now there's like I said, there's capabilities for you to be your own boss now.
Right.
But you know, if you want to play in the big leagues and you want to still act outside of your own things that you do, mm-hmm. you kind of have to be here.
Definitely.
They're still going to be cast in most of the big roles like they did here. They brought most of the actors here, then took them there.
Right.
And then they cast all the other guys. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what they. That's why I moved from L.A., because I was an actor first. And
Frisco, you mean?
From San Francisco. I was tired of them always casting me as the best friend.
Yeah.
to some other guy. I was like, I could have played that role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Totally understand. So cool, man. Thanks, Juan.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
Shoot out all your where you at on Instagram or Twitter. What's up?
You guys, if you want to see more about what I'm doing, you can go to on Instagram at Juan Gray, and that's pretty much it. At Juan Gray.
Okay, you just on Instagram? You on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter as well. I use one platform more than anything,
mm-hmm.
which is the Instagram one. But
so you take more photos and shit like that?
I don't know, man. I'm a visual kind of person, you know, so I like seeing the videos and the pictures every now and then. But it's, you know, it's a social business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where you at, Chris?
Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you listen to. You got to say that on your thing. You know, whatever you guys listen to, give us the 5-star. We need that for the metrics. Please follow us on our new
Patreon page. There will be a link in the show notes. Don't slip on that. Or you just go on the Patreon site and just type in Screenwriters Rant Room.
Exactly.
And search and you'll find it.
For sure. And again, we're on Facebook, all that other stuff. For all you guys, please check out Deadly Class. My man Juan here got some more shit coming up as we get into the deeper into the episode. You're going to really be taking it out. So good to have you, Juan. We appreciate you, man. So that's what's up. If you guys are grown, let's go ahead and do this thing. Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Boom, boom, boom. start diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.